Welcome to What the Heck's, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in 30 frequently asked questions regarding my turn or less. I'm Davey, and with me as always, we've got Phil. How are you tonight, Phil?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, glad to hear it. Tonight's just the two of us. We're going to be covering the Power Unbound and the latest FAQ errata and designer's commentary that dropped on, I believe, the 19th of June. So that is also the context at which we're coming at you. That's relatively recent. As always, thanks to the folks who getting in touch, give us the comments on Facebook and all that sort of thing. We'll get you with some contact info at the end. We're going to jump right into it tonight. We've got, I suppose we do community shout-outs, and appropriate to our tonight's topic, we wanted to shout out both John Reese and Aman. And Aman on his blog, Hexes and Warbands, John Reese on Can You Roll a Crit? Both those guys had incredibly fast put up reviews of the full Power Unbound cards. So those of us who are still waiting for them to drop, we got to, it's always a delicious moment to get to see actually what all the cards are and scroll through them. So I find that it tends to be whatever I'm doing ends up taking much longer because, you know, yeah, like I'm trying to make breakfast or something like that.
Quick 30-second break, right?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was just supposed to be checking my mail, and all of a sudden I'm going to read this whole article. But yeah, big thanks to those guys. They both put it out there real quick, and it's great for the community to get excited, get pumped up, and get talking about the cards before everyone has them in hand. So, as usual, before we jump into our topic, we talk about what the heck is going on with you. So, Phil, what you been up to?
So we have been having our local league, as we've mentioned on a couple of episodes before, and it's continuing to go well. We wrapped up the first sort of set where we played 8 weeks and then ran a tournament for the Shadeglass Trophy, which went to a very good player who is running the Briar Thorns. It seems to be picking up popularity, which is great because that was the whole point of our league. We started with like 4 people who were consistently playing, and I think the current count, we're up to 16 people now.
That's pretty awesome. You had a big windfall at the last outing, right? There was a group of 4 guys.
Yeah, there was 4 new people. Yeah. Friend group that all started together, and I guess there's 2 more that did not have time to stop in, but had dropped by to pick up the starter set. And so our local GW store owner was letting us know that we're going to have some new people stopping by soon.
Excellent. Cool. I have been working pretty heavy the last few weeks, so I haven't been able to be out. It's just kind of the nature of my schedule is that there's just some weeks I just won't be able to make it. So I was glad to hear that continue to get some people. I actually found somebody in my neighborhood just coincidentally plays. So another dad. Someone would say, hey, that guy paints models. And I was like,
small world.
Yeah, I know. So I was just chatting with him in line for like the summer camp thing. And then it was his suggestion. He was like, hey, we should play Underworld sometime for when the kids are in. I was like, excellent.
Yes.
So, yeah.
He may not know what he has gotten himself into.
Sure, no, but it's cool. And but I would say a big credit to you, especially for being so consistent at getting out there on the Thursdays, and is when we have it. And if you want, we may end up doing an episode about this. There is one out there from Path to Glory. They talk about trying to build a community, and that's one of the key things is that consistency. So people might see it and not be able to make it one Thursday, but then they'll have it in the back of their head, and it's that repeated being there, so that when someone shows up, they get a game. And I was pretty proud of how we were able to do that. For I think every week people would show up, it felt like we were able to promise somebody a game one way or the other. So, and sure. Big hats off to Vint, who kind of bent over backwards to make it possible for us. So that was much appreciated on our end. But yeah, as far as me not being able to get out, it means that I've been doing some of that webcam game. So where you set up a webcam and mirror boards against someone, you kind of have the simultaneous setup. And breaking my heart, I had to play against Tom Bond's hunt, who his Godsworn hunt, which Max Bernstein calls the Bondsworn hunt, which I quite enjoy. And those guys burn up the boar. They get some glory going in a hurry. It was really cool to watch, and really made me very jealous, because when I was playing against them, I'm like, oh man, they're so much fun. I want to be playing them right now. So maybe soon. I got some other things going on, then I'll jump back to them. But let's get into it. So for this episode, we're going to be talking about Power Unbound and the new, for shorthand, we might just call it the new bar. But when we say that, we're really talking about the designer's commentary and the errata. It's just kind of wordy to say the whole thing. I think I was trying to figure out an acronym for it, like bar DCE or, yeah, but it's getting a little
doesn't
messy.
Quite roll off the tongue.
Not at all. Not even a little bit. So if we say the new bar, we're really talking about that whole set of documents. We are not going to do a blow by blow through the cards. Those are available on the blogs and have been some time. You should go check it out. It'd be a great companion piece for you. And even the sort of leading deck builders have those available if you want to take a look at the individual cards and get some of that analysis. We're going to come at it from a sort of question style. We sort of brainstormed up some questions. We're each going to take a turn at it. We'll just lay them out for you. We'll kind of flow through it. And if you want to answer any of these questions, give us your opinion. If you think we're way off base, I'd love to hear how you, the listener, would answer some of these questions. So give us a hit up, and again, we'll get you that contact info at the end. All right, you ready, Phil?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So I'm going to throw at you, what do you think, we're going to say we said best / most powerful card in Unbound, and if you feel like those are two different things, you can explain it with your answer, but in your opinion, of those 60, give me your best or most powerful card in Unbound.
So I guess to chair this a little bit, the idea that I'm coming at this with is that, like, there's a lot of cards in here that I would consider powerful because of the things that they can do, but ultimately, I think what makes decks strong or not is how easily they can score glory. And so the card that I felt was one of the strongest is Warning Shot, which is an objective, if you haven't looked it up yet, is that if you are making a range 3 attack, or I think it's range 3 or greater, not just range 3, if you miss with that attack, you immediately score a glory. So obviously there's some great options like headshot and things for the dwarves where it's like, oh, you landed a ranged shot that's a critical, you get a glory, that's super awesome. Well, you know, you're going to have some failed attacks at some point in this game, whether because your dice just didn't work or because your opponent is going to make it not work by using, you know, last chance or something else. And so just having a card that's probably just going to score you glory for doing what you would already do anyway is, I think, very powerful.
Yeah, I mean, with the right set of objectives in hand, you could potentially be taking a shot with someone like Iron Hail and be like, there's only a very narrow window of things that I could roll that would not somehow score me glory on this shot, which is kind of nuts, you know? So, yeah, I think that's a great pick. For me, I think I went with Hand of Sigmar, and there's been some good talk about the math behind this, but it's the first innate that has nothing to do with magic that we've seen in the game. So it can be placed on any of the curse breakers, and it gives them an innate hammer, which at first glance doesn't seem super exciting. And I, like a lot of people, thought, those guys are pretty accurate anyway. Especially when they're inspired, especially if they had just cast Empower, because they're rolling three dice needing hammers and they've got to reroll. But what it means is that you're almost certainly putting your opponent on either a crit to defend if they're a single dice, or at least multiple successes to defend, which is a really, really big deal. And I think it might have been... And I'm sorry if I attribute this wrong, but I think it was Jonathan Davis put a little blurb up about the math, and it's almost equivalent to the Potion of Rage, except that it stays in play. And the Potion of Rage is already getting taken, like, nonstop. So that's kind of bananas to think about. So
I mean, when I was reading through the new rule book and I saw that innate was going to be a thing, and I think their examples in the book actually talked about attack and defense dice, and they didn't really mention it in like the magic sort of realm. Mm-hmm. And just thinking about that from season one perspective was like mind blowing. And yeah. I was like, wait, you get an additional automatic success just all the time? Like, that's great. And then I was kind of glad to see that it didn't show up that much. Mm-hmm. Because it, you know, there's so many times where your dice fail you. So having guaranteed successes on attacks is always going to be good. But on characters who are already pretty accurate, it means that you're probably just sort of salting the earth for your opponent a little bit. Where it's like, oh, I guess I won't roll those defense dice because I can't possibly stop this now.
Right, exactly. So it's a pretty spicy card, and disappointingly, it is restricted only to curse breakers. I obviously didn't need to get restricted. I would have still been impressed if they'd restricted it to just the two,
Rastus and Amos.
Or even just pick one of them, I think it would have been an interesting pick to say it's restricted to Stormsire, because it would be particularly powerful. He does have that range to attack, but yeah, they went whole hog, so congratulations, Cursebreakers.
Didn't need it.
Here's one, and I wanted to include this because it's one thing to talk about the most powerful. What did you find to be the most interesting card in Power Unbound, Phil?
So, just from the sheer, like, change in headspace for what I think this card can do is Spirit Bond. And Spirit Bond is an upgrade that you play it on a character, and when you play it on them, you choose another one of your fighters, and as long as that other fighter is still on the board, they're always considered to be supporting the fighter who's upgraded.
Right.
That's great because it means you now are always rolling supports for attack and defense rolls, but it also can then combine with some of the older cards that allowed for, like, when this fighter is upgraded, they always count as two supports.
Yeah.
And some weird stuff like that that I generally would always write off.
Sure.
Because trying to line those things up in a normal way is pretty difficult. But now that the positioning doesn't really matter, the math change there for going from normal attacks to always having double supports could actually be pretty crazy.
Yeah, I feel like there's a number of different combos. I feel like there's a lot to explore here as far as interesting things. I know the Godsworn have a number of different cards that proc off of supports, and there's a lot to explore here. That's kind of cool. I agree. Very interesting. And then I think. So the obvious parallel is to, Helpful Whispers.
Yeah, Helpful Whispers.
Restricted card, right? So it's interesting, right? Because this is not restricted. There is a way to turn it off other than to kill the fighter that has it on. You could kill the fighter that is helping. But also this helps on defense.
Right.
So to go back to our Guardians conversation, everyone's favorite person to attack now, Galligan has this, or Ilthari, probably almost a better one, because it effectively bumps her to two shields, the statistical equivalent of two shields, only you can't cleave her, and you're probably having the person to help her out is Galligan, because who's gonna pop that guy up? So very interesting. So, yeah, I very very cool design on this card. This is a great choice. For me, I am going back to the Cursebreakers, and it is a Focal Formation, which is a score immediately at the end of an activation if Amos is holding an objective and Rastus is holding an objective, and I think this is a really cool, interesting card that might not get picked all that often, only because those guys are just drowning in cool cards anyway. So,
Well, and I'm not sure it goes with their play style very often.
Sure.
And they have so many other things that they can score super easily that, like, where this would be super amazing in a lot of other warbands, because Cursebreakers are just, you know, swimming in riches. They're just kind of like, yeah, it's nice, but I'm I've got a good stuff already. I'm fine.
But this is the first, I feel like it's the first real score immediately we've seen that involves holding objectives, and it's kind of surprising to see it in Cursebreakers. It could have been something like, you know, if Red Cap stick it, if any of the three Goblin Archers, if pick any two of those if they're holding or something like that. You know, that there's a lot of possibilities there. And what I like is that it's at the end of an activation, so it's cool because it's a score immediately that involves objectives. If you use something like Sidestep, you'll have to use... Because if you use Sidestep in your power step, then you got to go all the way to the next activation. I think it's just a pretty cleverly designed card that is powerful early on. You can get some... if with good objective placement, you can get some glory real easily without much risk. Mm-hmm. But then late in the game, a lot more difficult because you are going to have higher demands on where you want to have those two, and one of them might not be alive anymore. So,
very true. I think I also agree this is a very interesting card, but I think it is more interesting to me because of what it shows as a new potential design space.
Exactly. It's right.
Something we've never seen before. And I'm guessing that they're trying something like this out because they're trying to find more ways to do hold objective cards, because I think they've kind of exhausted what they can do right now for holding objectives. Because they've got, you know, tactical supremacy for, you know, all the different combinations now, and they've got the whatever the one is where it's hold a specific three, which nobody's ever gonna run.
Well, somebody did somewhere. Wasn't it the highest player you played, but he said something like he just never scored at all tournaments.
So I don't know. I'm hoping that we see more cards like that
going. I agree. And this is exactly why I picked it. I've been thinking for a while about, like, how could you make objectives more relevant or give a boost to objective holding decks, and giving them a way to score immediately is kind of a big deal. And this is a pretty safe way to test it, is to put it in this warband and restrict it to a warband, right? Because if you make it a universal, then you might accidentally, you know, unlock tip, the floodgates or something.
Tip scales a little too hard or something.
Sure. All right. Well, that's been a little bit on Unbound. Give me your... Actually, I'll tell you what. Let's sit on Unbound for a while. What do you have a biggest surprise for Unbound?
So there's a few things that surprised me about this card set, but I guess the sort of first thing that I was surprised by was the amount of cards that related to spellcasting. Before the sort of articles about sort of saying what they're going to do with this card set, I figured it would be something a little bit closer to the leaders pack, where it would sort of be a smattering of everything. And then there'd be a few gems, and otherwise it would just sort of be another card pack. But instead it's like, wow, okay, now all of a sudden we turn magic up to 11, and it was already okay in a number of situations if you built for it specifically. And obviously now there's some concern that it's going to be a very, you know, prevalent part of the meta. I don't know if that's borne out yet, because obviously the cards are very new, but it did surprise me a little bit. It caught me off guard. And to sort of go along with that, then, is part of that is that it felt a little bit like the rich got richer with this card set.
Sure.
And by that I mean that a lot of the stuff that's really good, I think, is going to be helping warbands that we're already seeing a lot of play and we're already doing very well in tournaments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think some of it is that inherent issue with Cursebreakers being such good casters that if good caster cards come in, then Cursebreakers really get to leverage those quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, and Althari as well.
Sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Like, she's very powerful, and the Guardians just in general are really good too, and they can sort of play off of her getting better to a certain degree. So, I mean, that was surprising. And then, I mean, even from the non-casting side of things, I feel like Profiteers got better with this card set, mm-hmm. And there's a few things here and there that were going to just help out a number of aggro builds. I think Molag in some ways got slightly helped out, but really depends on play style, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's some cards in there you can really leverage very nicely, but yeah, I think that's a valid point. Mine was a little more general. Biggest surprise was that there were so many good cards. I was expecting expecting something like Leaders, and it makes me wonder a little bit if Leaders was, I don't know, if Leaders was it after it was already releasing, like, oh, we should have something to bridge, because it felt like they were incredibly conservative with Leaders. There were cards that were, it's a thing they do where something, you know, here's a card, it's restricted only to a leader, and it is, on top of being restricted to only being played on a leader, it is strictly worse than a more universal option that you can take. So this is only something you're going to take if you really want to double down on this one mechanic. And here it was just surprising how many of these cards, you know, there's a ton that are clearly excellent, and then there's quite a few that are worthy of heavy consideration. So a lot of edge case ones, and I'll kind of assume that they'd be pretty conservative with it, but I think they're getting more comfortable maybe with what they're designing, or more confident at least. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know. I almost wonder if Leaders was like, if they didn't quite have a grasp on the meta maybe, and thought that some of the cards would be better than they were.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It'd be really interesting to know what sort of the design sort of process was going into Leaders, and like how much lead time was going into those cards, because, you know, if it was pretty significant lead time, they might not really have had a good sense of how strong some of them might have been. Cause there are a few in there that get quite a bit of use.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, just the handful, and then everything else is never touched.
Yeah. There's a couple of those when they come out. You know, we'll have some newer players that'll sometimes use some cards where you're like, what does that do? You know, like, I don't think I even know what that is. Is that actually a card? Yeah. So, for that, let's go on. And was there anything that you found to be a disappointment in Unbound? Something that came out that you're like, man, really wish this wasn't, this had come out a little bit different.
So I felt a little bit bad, like looking through some of the faction specific cards and seeing like, oh yeah, some of these are super great. And then seeing things like really pointy stick for Zarbag skits, and I was like, what? And I think it sort of goes to what we were saying about how, like, oh, there's so many good cards in here that it makes anything that like is less than mediocre just stand out like a sore thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately it feels like a lot of those that do kind of stand out as being bad ended up in the faction restricted cards.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes, and I don't know, I think this is something that we have probably talked about before, but just like, why are the generics generally better than the faction specific cards? It makes decks feel ununique, and like everything becomes homogenized because all the best cards are available to all the decks.
Sure.
And I'd like to see that change, but it seems like until only until just the last two warbands have there really been a good selection of faction-specific, very powerful cards. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just sort of like, okay, anybody who wasn't Profiteers and Cursebreakers and Molag, well, I guess here's a few extra things that you can think about that you'll probably not end up using because sure. they're just okay.
Yeah, I and that's talking specifically about the warband specific things. I've seen some discussion that there's some people who think that Eyes of the Nine get some pretty helpful things out of this, you know, with the caster things, and it's someone was making the argument that because Cursebreakers already had such great cards, having some more great cards doesn't necessarily move the needle all that much for them. But having access to some things, some of these new spell cards is a bigger increase for Eyes of the Nine. So, but to your point, at this point it does seem like it's an intentional design choice to generally have on average have the universals be better than the faction specific. And I'd be interested in what the thought process is behind that, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I guess maybe it's like an equality thing. You know, if there's a powerful card and everyone can have it, then you haven't accidentally tipped the scales too much in somebody's favor. So
that's very possible.
And all that said, I mean, even just when I was thinking specifically about the objective focal formation that we were talking about earlier. And I was thinking, oh, you know, what if it exists in these other factions that I came up, you know, like just even the one I threw out on air here where it's, you know, well, what if it was two goblins holding, like, man, that would be super duper easy for them to score. That'd be like an auto include.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Well, maybe you need to tone it down. It's hard. I mean, it's gotta be hard to design these cards. So just cause we say we're
no, for sure. I don't envy it for yeah. sure.
For me, I'm going to go even more specific as far as, disappointment with a faction specific card. One that stood out especially to me was the Eyes of the Nine specific that can go on Tourash and Narvia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark of favor, right?
Yep.
And it is, man. Anytime they take any damage, you roll a dice on a crit, they ignore that damage.
What? Just why?
Yeah. Why? And the thing is, like, anytime they take damage means probably the first time they take damage, you know, and they don't roll a crit for this card, they're probably dead because they only have two health, right? They take damage a lot. This goes back, I know I've talked about this before. I think there's probably a tension between getting a thematically appropriate card. Like, you wouldn't want to, it wouldn't make sense to give Tourash a card, I don't know, it says, like, this upgrade, he gets +5 wounds, right? Like, but the thing yeah. is, for something to be specific to Tourash, it's got to be a really, really good card for you to take it, because right. that guy is very likely to get popped. And so, I mean, we talked with, when we had Jonathan Davis on, we were talking about it'd be cool if there was a card that made one of them a caster or something like that and gave you some insurance in case Vortimus went down. You know, that I think there are some options out there for some of those weaker fighters to make them interesting and kind of make them, yeah, just make them a more interesting piece. So I was a little disappointed to see that trend continue.
For sure. As an Eyes player, I was definitely yeah. upset by that card.
I do know. I was like, oh, specific to Tourash and Narvia. Oh, how cool. Oh, not very cool. All right.
Nope.
Oh, well. But Eyes, I think you got some interesting stuff to play with some of the new cards. All right. We'll save. Yeah, let's talk about it. What's your takeaway from the Unbound pack? Your overall takeaway? After seeing all the cards, playing with them a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. So I think the thing that strikes me the most, and obviously we've already talked about this enough, but just the power level, and it's got me thinking that maybe they're trying to shake things up a little bit more. I mean, right, you can balance the game entirely by weeding out the things that were outside of the bell curve and mm-hmm. trying to make sure that you know, everything sort of gets funneled towards the center, or you could just widen the center, right? You just add more good cards across the board, and that way you don't need to have as much stuff be restricted and banned. And so we'll see what happens with season three. I think that'll probably be more telling as to whether this is a real trend or if this is just a one-off that maybe whoever was working on these cards was just a little, they're dialing things up just a little too much. But, yeah, I think I might actually like it though, if they decided that a nice way to start to try and adjust the metagame is to just put in a few more powerful cards that are available across the board.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I think what people enjoy in this game is having a new challenges and new deck building options that will kind of shake things up so that when you come out and play, the decks look different and you've got a new puzzle to solve, basically. And a great way to do that is by dropping cards that affect deck construction substantially in one way or another. And I think leaders didn't appreciably adjust that. And so, but I think Power Unbound will, and will kind of change the way people are putting stuff together, and that'll keep things fresh while you wait for the next shakeup, wherever it may come from. So I can't say whether it was too much or it certainly wasn't too little. but I wouldn't say right off the bat that it was too much or anything like that. I mean, maybe it will be, we'll see, but I think it's certainly interesting, and that's a pretty good, mark in its favor. Yeah, for me, I kind of already talked about it. I feel like they've gained confidence in the card releases. And I hope they feel like this is a regular thing they can do, even if we just get one pack of 60 every season that doesn't come with figures. That's kind of a cool way to just goose the game a little bit. So,
yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, that's our general take on Power Unbound. Let's take a look at the bar. We've got sort of the same set of questions. Do you have a favorite update that came in the bar?
Being an Eyes of the Nine player, I really love playing Keep Them Guessing, mm-hmm. and seeing that it's been clarified that Hidden Paths counts for Keep Them Guessing, which if you look back at previous Hidden Paths rulings, doesn't quite make a whole lot of sense, but yeah. I'm going to just roll with it because it's helpful for me and it's fun to be able to get that move off sure. of a ploy, but yeah, so that was interesting. And then I'm a fan of adding the restriction to spell casting so that you now need line of sight, just like any other attack, whether it's coming from a spell attack or from a ploy. While I liked being able to, you know, hit people with spells behind blocked hexes, it did at times feel a little weird to be able to, like, hide Vortimus in a corner and then be like, okay, and then you're gonna get, you know, Sphere of Akshid, and then you're gonna get Racking Changed, and oh, all of a sudden you've taken 3 or 4 damage and you can't even shoot me back or anything like that. So
right, I mean, it makes you work a little hard for it. It provides a chance for counterplay. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Yep. So definitely like those rulings.
Mm-hmm. For me, I liked that Cursebreakers went to Empower once per fighter per round. So if you're down to just Amos, you can't, with Amos with an innate channel, you can sit in your corner and say, well, I've automatically got these 4 spells on these activations and then, you know, these 2 spells in hand. Okay, I got 6 spells without ever, like, rolling a dice or moving or anything like that. And it wasn't, you know, I hadn't played it enough against it to say that it was too powerful or something like that. There's certainly strong opinions out and about in the community about it. I'm not saying it was too powerful. I'm just saying it wasn't especially interesting, you know, for the same reasons that people would get frustrated with relics, that somebody was sitting in the corner and hitting the 4 glory button again and again.
Yeah.
So I think that was a healthy change. Go ahead.
I agree. And as someone who did try out full spellcasting Cursebreakers, I definitely felt like a cheater when I was just sitting in a corner with innate channels just going, and I'll automatically cast, and I'll automatically cast again, and I'll do it again. And it's just like, yep.
Yeah. All right. I think a good rule of thumb for this is that if it's a mechanic that a new player is, if you do it against a new player and they're like, well, that seems pretty silly, and maybe it's not a great mechanic.
It's probably not well balanced. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Or it's just, there's a concept I've heard in Age of Sigmar, one of the designers was talking about, and they called it verisimilitude. Yeah. Is the thing on the board doing what you feel like it should be doing? And a Stormcast sitting there and just going like, oh, I already got this spell, but like, let's really, really do it for real. And again, like, what's even happening there? And I, this is a little bit of a different game, so there's a little more room for some of that, but there's a reason we play this with cool sculpted figures and, the background that it's got and all that sort of thing. And those aren't nothing. And so when you have something that's a little bit disruptive to that, that can be a bit of a bummer. So, all to say, that was a modest change and I liked it a lot.
So, definitely.
How about a surprise? Anything surprise you with the bar?
The ruling on the Crown of Avarice was ridiculous, because that is not how that sentence reads at all.
Sure.
And I'm fine with it, but at the same time, like, it's going to cause some consternation for people, because now you just can't score glory off of killing that fighter.
Yeah, it seemed... it was weird, right? Like, it didn't seem necessary, but I mean, I guess they must have intended it to be that way if they end up.
Yeah, I mean, they must have, but it also just is not worded that way. So it's like, if that is what you meant, shame. It's kind of like with Molag, where it's like, well, that's not how you wrote it, but I guess we're going to change it.
Right.
And now anybody who comes into the game and just reads the card is not going to know how it actually works.
Sure. With Molag specifically, that's the problem with errata. And for me, my surprise was an errata. It was the errata to keep them guessing, where now it's four actions out of that list of five, and that fifth action being an action on a fighter card, and it now says other than a reaction.
Yeah.
Which I like as a change, and it's just a tiny tweak to this card. And even the whole thing where any reaction on a fighter card counted as an action, that was kind of like a deep dive. So this is one where a brand new player is probably playing it like this anyway, probably doesn't quite.
Most likely.
Yeah. So this isn't as problematic from that. Them being willing to make that small tweak, it's cool, because I like that card. I like keeping them guessing a lot. I like what it, I like those. I like playing against it, or the counterplay there, where you're saying, okay, I think keep them guessing is coming. Do I have a way to deny this? Like, what things are they going to do? Can I stymie them? And they've made these suboptimal activations in order to get it. And then can I get it so they still don't score it? So I think there's a fun mini game with that card. And I like this, that it brought it kind of back in line with where you'd want it to be power wise. And it's fun to have it. It makes me wonder, it feels like then you could have been able to do this sort of a tweak with Extreme Flank, right?
They're, yeah.
Although, again, talking about it's easier said than done, I think I played around in my head with some different wordings, and all of my rewordings of Extreme Flank just got really, really convoluted. That may have been at issue there. And the other one I'm wondering... like you were talking about, Hidden Paths is a strange one. Like, it feels like a candidate for this, because it's specifically a card that the two consecutive sentences are, let's see,
it's like that they like place them and this counts as a move action.
They are considered to have
been moved.
Yeah, they're considered to have made a move action, and all the FAQs are like, it's not a move action. I'm like, but it says they're considered to have made a move action. And so there's just been this weird duality with that card. Actually, even reading it, it seems a lot clearer than what the FAQs did to it. Anyway, I guess, like I said, it was a surprise that they made this little change to keep them guessing. It was a welcome surprise. I think it's potentially unstable ground if you make too many errata updates to cards. But this is a real light touch, and I thought it was a cool move that I didn't think they'd be willing to make.
Yeah, for sure.
Talk to me about your biggest disappointment in the bar.
So for the actual restricted cards, I was quite surprised that we only saw two move. I felt like there was a number of other cards that could have been moved onto the restricted list. And considering that the things that did move, one of them being Longstrider, which was not a card I was expecting to go into the restricted list anyway, like, I guess I can kind of see it because they're trying to rein in some of Molag's passive glory, but like, hardly anybody else was using that card. And so now it's like it's not a really tough choice because instead of running that, you just put in the, like, burst whatever the new version, yeah, burst yeah. of speed, the new one that does exactly the same thing. But
yeah.
But so I was a little surprised by that and a little disappointed that we didn't see a few more things move just to shake deck builds up a little bit more. Although, that being said, I think Tome of Offerings moving was, one, not surprising, and two, a very welcome move because it was everywhere and it was super strong.
Sure. And I think you'll still see a ton of it, but I think very rightfully reduce some of the more powerful options you have elsewhere in the deck. So,
right.
My disappointment was a very specific card, and I remember with the first ban in restricted, where some cards had a very, very short life of being out on the quote unquote out on the street before getting restricted. And for me, I fully expected Sorceress Flourish, which is a gambit you react after casting a spell to do an additional damage. That is basically Twist the Knife for Magic, and Pit Trap.
Yeah.
I make the equivalence to Twist the Knife because it's specific to, there's no drive back requirement. It's pretty easy to do, and it feels like it, in my mind, it feels pretty clearly like something that should be restricted compared to those others. My only guess is that they figured that with the additional restrictions to gambit spells, that maybe that would be enough to keep this in check. But
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. Really good. I'm just trying to figure out what the reasoning would have been. So when I first saw it, I was like, oh well, clearly that's going to be, welcome to the world. You're restricted. But have fun spell casting decks for a little while with that. But
yeah.
All right. This is for the latest bar. Give me your takeaway from this overall.
So, I guess it feels like they're trying to make sure that they answer all the questions that need to be answered without having too many like serious shakeups and ramifications from those answers.
And that makes sense. You want your shakeups to come from cards, not from a document somebody's got to read, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, because like with a lot of things, if the errata becomes too big, you've essentially made the game too arcane for new players. If a new card basically exists in the errata because what's currently printed is no longer going to be used, that's really rough because now you have to know that this card you have to go look it up. And this happens in, Age of Sigmar and 40K all the time. It's like, replace this whole paragraph with this whole new paragraph. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's fine if you're sort of in the system and you know that this is the kind of thing that happens. And so I appreciate that they don't do that, because I think it would be a mess. But at the same time, I'm also seeing that the rulings don't necessarily seem to be about language. It seems to be a lot more about intent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is starting to show some weird stuff. And like, I don't know that I feel like those kinds of rulings might start to introduce some additional confusion. Because now, like, if you just read the card, you won't actually know what it does either. So,
sure. Absolutely. I mean, Hidden Paths is a great example. It feels like it's had some rulings that were intent based, but even then we're not totally sure what the intent ended up being, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so that remains one of the more confusing things. Like, what does it contribute to? What objectives can you score off of it? So, I think you're right. And it's a little bit surprising to me, because I feel like when Extreme Flank was out and still about, it felt like they ruled it in the most literal way possible, and, you know, right up until it was banned.
Right.
So I kind of thought that'd be their general philosophy going forward on it. But yeah, for me, I think what it told me was that that they intend with this sort of document to keep as gentle a touch as possible. So they, like I was saying, they're trying not to do big shakeups through this. And I what I do like about that, what I'm assuming some of the philosophy is that besides not wanting to shake things up other than with, you know, actual war bands or cards or that sort of thing, it would be goofy if we were whipsawing back and forth, like a knee-jerk reaction, overcorrect, oh no, we did too much, let's go back the other way. Mm-hmm. That would be pretty exhausting as a player base to deal with. So from my point of view, I think if I had to pick either too gentle a touch or too strong a touch, I'd rather they go a little bit too gentle
with
this sort of document. And I think they did a great job. I think you know, the nature of discussing this sort of thing is you have the more comment-worthy ones, but there's plenty of stuff that they did in there that I'm like, yep, that's perfect. That's what we expected, and that's and it makes sense. And so
yeah.
I thought overall it was a really excellent document. I'm glad it came out when it did, I guess. So.
Yeah, and I guess one other thing that I didn't mention but I think should be talked about is that there has been, in this specific errata, there's quite a few answers specific to reaction windows, and I think that's great to see that they're trying to help clarify that, because mm-hmm. it keeps coming up in the community as something that is very confusing about the game, and any amount of clarification we can have about which reaction windows go where and when, what's the timing on these things, the closer we can get to like a fully fleshed out timeline of like how do you break this action down, the better off I think we're going to be. Mm-hmm.
I think it's helpful, and I think it also shows that they are aware that they have a little bit of an issue there. If they're spending a lot of their sort of resources in this document is addressing those things, they know that there is, you know, a problem, basically.
For sure.
So, well, all right, that is our take on the Power Unbound and the latest bar errata design commentary. We are going to be back at you in 2 weeks' time, as we release biweekly, every other Monday, basically. And I think we're going to be back at you. We're going to be talking about some rules of thumb. It'd be considered for developing players, some guidelines that you could use to improve your play. And we'll get into that, unless something else kind of jumps out at us. But I think we'll be on with that. You can get in touch with us. We'd be very happy if you did at WTHcast or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. Go ahead. If any of those questions really got you fired up, thought we totally missed the point, or you had something that you thought was a good, worthy of further discussion, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can also drop us a review. We don't really ask for anything for this show. If you want to help us out, the best thing you can do is drop us a review on your platform of choice, and we really appreciate you taking the time to do that. If you want other Mortal Realms content, you can get to themortalrealms.com, and our own great Aaron has put up a grand cybernetic palace of all his all his beloved content.
His own crystal tower, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. As far as your recommended listening for this episode, we're going to recommend Power by Kanye West and Unbound by Asgeir. And that's going to do it for us today. For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
And this is Phil. Busted out sort of the experimental eyes of the nine.
Oh, he's back, the mad scientist. And yeah, we haven't seen the next quarterly prize package yet, right?
I don't know. I guess probably not.
Yeah. If we're following last time, then dwarves
and one.
Yeah. let's see.
That'd be super weird if they just continuously...
That would be a weird trend. Yeah.
And the last factions just don't get anything. Oh, okay.
All right, so I'm going to hang up. Better late than never.